Welcome to the Coggin Avenue Baptist Church Podcast. Through life's most difficult questions, Coggin wants to help you learn God's truth in a supportive community that pursues a full life in Jesus. If you'd like to learn more about us, then you can check us out online at CogginChurch.org.
All right, good morning, church. How we doing? Awesome. Good to see you. If you've got your Bibles, flip to Genesis chapter 40. We're going to continue in the life of Joseph today, but before we do that, I just got to say you look really good this morning. Everybody prepared by getting dressed, and your neighbor next to you thanks you for that. Can you imagine the circus that that would be? Let's not go there, okay? Let's not dwell on that. But you look nice, and so it shows that you did some preparation before you came this morning, and maybe that goes beyond the physical and into praying that God would move, that he would speak to you, that he would open your eyes to see the truth of his word, and by his spirit, you would take another step in your transformation to be more like Jesus. And if you didn't do that, it's okay. It's never too late. You can do it right now. But preparation is a key skill to develop. It gives you the ability to think down, look down the corridor of time and think, all right, what do I need in order to get there? And then make those steps in order to get there. But there's all kinds of life events that you can't really, you can do some preparation, but there's just some things you can't prepare for. Like there's the idea of marriage and family, and then there's the reality of marriage and family. There's the idea that I'm going to work hard at this job and I'm going to try to move up, and then you get passed over for those promotions, and those things are disappointing. And maybe there's even that I got the promotion, but it came with a lot more like not good baggage that I really didn't need in my life. But then, how do you prepare for betrayal? How do you prepare for abandonment, for loss, for grief? How do you prepare for the moment when you find yourself asking, God, what is taking you so long? Right? That's where Joseph could possibly be, but we're going to also see a resilient faith in Joseph today. But when we first met him in chapter 37, he was the favored son, given either a long-robed or long-sleeved, whatever it was. He was arrayed in splendor from his father, the favored son, made his brothers jealous. Brothers sold him into slavery. He ended up in Potiphar's house, and then at no fault of his own, ended up again in a pit. And so now he's got to be thinking, I keep making the right call, and everything keeps going sideways for me. If you compare his life with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, his forefathers, they just kind of kept stumbling into blessing. It's like they would make the wrong decision, and God would bless them. And then they would double down and make another wrong decision, and God would bless them. And now Joseph is the one where it's like, man, he's the ideal. He keeps doing the right thing, but he keeps winding up in pits and being sold from one master to another, and it's got to be disorienting for him. But we are told this key piece of info, that the Lord was with him. And all of this trouble that Joseph is going through has everything to do with what his original dream was, what that original calling that God had on his life, where he would be exalted and people would come and bow down to him. God wasn't just preparing a position for Joseph. He was preparing Joseph for the position. So if Joseph was going to be the kind of leader he needed to be in Egypt to save the world, God had to work on him in the pit. And the same thing is true for us when Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you. And Jesus has a calling that he has laid out on each of our lives. But he's not just, he hasn't just gone to prepare a place. He's right now preparing you for that place. He's giving you a heart that longs for heaven. That if by the Spirit you listen to his Spirit and you obey and you walk in faithfulness and you spend time with him, that your desires are going to shift from desiring the things of this world to desiring your true home. And that's what Jesus is doing in you by his Spirit. And in the here and now, God doesn't just have a calling for you. He's preparing you for that calling. That's where we find Joseph in Genesis 40, still waiting, still in the pit, but still looking for where God is at work. So let's stand and read Genesis chapter 40 together. starting in verse 1. After this, the king of Egypt's cupbearer and baker offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guards in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guards assigned Joseph to them as their personal attendant, and they were in custody for some time. The king of Egypt's cupbearer and baker, who were confined in the prison, each had a dream. Both had a dream on the same night, and each dream had its own meaning. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he looked and saw that they were distraught. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We had dreams," they said to him, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Don't interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. "In my dream, there was a vine in front of me. On the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms came out and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." "This is the interpretation," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. In just 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position. You will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand the way you used to when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well for you, remember that I was with you. Please show kindness to me by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. For I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should put me in this dungeon." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was positive, he said to Joseph, "I also had a dream. Three baskets of white bread were on my head. In the top basket were all sorts of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is its interpretation," Joseph replied. "The three baskets are 3 days." Sounds good so far. "In just 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from off you." That feels wrong to me, the way he worded that. And hang you on a tree. "Then the birds will eat the flesh from your body." On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he gave a feast for all his servants. He elevated the chief cupbearer and the chief baker among his servants. Pharaoh restored the chief cupbearer to his position as cupbearer, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But Pharaoh hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had explained to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. This is the word of God. You can be seated. So God often equips his called ones through adversity. Like Joseph, we don't come out of the womb just primed and ready to follow God's calling. Our hearts have to be transformed. Our hearts have to be shaped. Before we can live out God's calling, we have to see where we truly stand in relation to God and respond to his mercy. So just looking at this passage as a whole, I want us to start here, that preparation for calling begins with coming awake to the gospel. Preparation for calling begins with coming awake to the gospel. So we've seen gospel shadows really all over Genesis so far, through the lives of the patriarchs and even back into creation. We've seen the beauty of the gospel of Jesus even all through there, but this story is really no exception to that. So first, I want you to see that that Joseph is here wrongly imprisoned, right? He says that in verse 15, "For I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should put me in the dungeon." So I want you to see the gospel beats that this has. What we have right here is an innocent sufferer, okay? So we've got an innocent sufferer who is then placed alongside two guilty ones. The verse 1 says, "After this, the king of Egypt's cupbearer and baker offended." The word is sinned. They sinned against Pharaoh. We're not sure what they did. We don't know if they were collaborating together to try to kill or overthrow Pharaoh. We don't know if their offenses were even related. But both of them offended and sinned against Pharaoh and found themselves in the dungeon. We don't know the severity of their sin, just that here they are. So you've got Joseph, a sinless one, placed among the guilty, two guilty in particular. Then for them, he sees and has concern for them. As the innocent one, he shows concern for the guilty. And he interprets their dreams, goes to God on their behalf, and interprets their dreams for them. So I want you to, can we think of a story anywhere else where you have an innocent one who is placed among two guilty ones, that he shows concern for them, one of them is lifted up, and one of them is cut off? Can we think of a story anywhere in the life of Jesus where that rings true? Well, it happens on the cross when Jesus is put between two thieves. And so here, I want us to start when we're thinking about preparation for calling. What we tend to do when we come to a story like Joseph, and it's an amazing story, lots of practical application, things like that. But what we want to do is we want to see ourselves as Joseph. That's what we want to do, because he's awesome. It's like, I want to be that, and here's what I got to do in order to be that. But if we're going to read ourselves into anyone in this story, you're not Joseph. I'm not Joseph. We are the cupbearer and the baker. That's who we are. And we're in trouble because we've sinned against the king. And we need someone to intercede for us. We need someone to go on our behalf and intercede for us and seek answers for us. The story of these two men, it points us to the reality that every person will one day face. That we will either be lifted up to the king's side or we will be cut off. That's the reality. And so I tell my kids this from time to time, but you know, on judgment day, when we stand before Jesus, that's a day daddy can't help you. I can't stand there for you. Mom cannot answer for you. I cannot answer for you. Your pastor cannot answer. Your spouse cannot answer for you. You will stand before the judgment seat of Jesus. But here's where the story takes a turn. Because the cupbearer and the baker, they don't really have a say in their fate here. It's just told to them, you're going to be lifted up, you're going to die. But in the gospel story, the king invites us to come. He welcomes us to come. That though we are guilty and have sinned against him, he invites us home. That's the gospel message, that though we have sinned against him greatly, he invites us to his side. And so the only thing that will bar you from eternal life is your own unwillingness, and that's it. There is no sin too great that can cut you off from the presence of God for eternity. Only your unwillingness. That's it. C.S. Lewis has a quote that says, the gates of hell are locked from the inside. And so you are the only thing. Me. I am the only thing barring me from life. So whether you're calling this morning, as we kind of look at this picture of the innocent one interceding for the guilty, for us, our preparation for our calling begins here by coming awake to the gospel, finding life in Jesus through his word, by his spirit. Because you cannot be prepared for the calling that God has for you until you answer the one who calls your name. God's first aim is not to give you a job to do. It's just to be with you. That's his primary aim. And by transforming you in his presence, then sends you out and gives you a calling. So whether your calling this morning is to salvation, maybe you've been fighting a call to ministry for some time, and you know it's there, and you've been like, I don't think that's for me, and yet it keeps coming back again and again. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's you need to follow the Lord in baptism. We got to baptize this morning in the 8:30. It was awesome. Or maybe it's just going across the street to your neighbor and telling them about the God who loves you and who loves them. So God's calling always begins with his invitation to come awake, come to him, that you are welcomed to his side. And before he sends you, he calls you to be with him. So if he's calling your name today, don't brush it off. And regardless of what that response looks like, whether it's first-time obedience, coming to Jesus, or something else, don't brush it off. Don't leave here today without seeking answers to that calling. But what if, like Joseph, you're one who has been awake to the gospel for some time, and maybe you've been walking faithfully, or maybe you've been a little bit asleep at the wheel. But Joseph, Genesis 40 shows us that Joseph's faith, that though he keeps finding himself in pits and stripped of robes and like left destitute, his faithfulness and his faith don't diminish. They deepen. So once you belong to God, he begins to shape you for the calling he has for you. And that transformation happens through the practice of his presence. So preparation for calling is sustained by the practice of the presence of God. See, what Joseph understood is there is a huge difference, and you and I need to get this. There is a huge difference between believing that God is everywhere, that's a theology that I think we would all agree to, and then there's the certainty and the confidence that he's with me. That's wildly different, because you can believe that God is everywhere and yet live as though he is distant. But he is with you, just as he is with Joseph. And it really fleshes out, this point fleshes out in two ways. One is the way that he attends to these guilty ones, these prisoners, and then also this assurance that he has that in God's promises. Look at what he says in verse 4. In verse 4, it says that Joseph worked as the cupbearer and baker's personal attendant. The ESV says that he attended them, or your translation might say ministered to them. Because that's what this word means. It's actually a word that we find about what the priests do inside the tabernacle in the temple, where they attend to or they minister to the Lord. So this is a very, it's a very worship-filled word. When Joseph is attending to these prisoners, the way Joseph views it is this is an extension and an overflow of my devotion to God. It's not an empty chore, but this is something that showcases my devotion to the Lord. It's easy for us to kind of create this divide of there's spiritual activity and then there's ordinary activity. There's supernatural and there's natural. There are things that deserve excellence on my part, my best effort, and then there are things that I can just kind of brush off. But what Joseph said is that all of my life, every bit of it, from my waking to my going to sleep, all of it is done before the face of God. And all of it deserves my attention, my excellence, and my worship-filled devotion to it. So whatever it is that I'm doing, remember, being a glorified servant in a prison while also being a prisoner is not quite the dream that Joseph had. This is not what the expectation reality thing hasn't quite come to fruition yet. And yet, Joseph is doing these things with excellence, doing them with his whole heart, seeing to it that the Lord is worshiped even through my service of prisoners, even though I'm innocent and they're guilty. So all of his life and all of your life is lived before the face of God. But here's the second thing. Joseph is still holding on to God's promise that he will one day be exalted. Here's what I would do. I know myself. Here's what I would do if I was in prison wrongly. Even though I had this vision that one day I was going to be in charge, basically. If someone came up and was like, man, I had the craziest dream last night, and it's really stressing me out because I don't know what it means, I would say I wouldn't worry about it. Because I had two dreams once that seemed to indicate that I was going to be the boss. And yet here I am in prison. So man, just don't even sweat it. It's fine. Dreams don't mean anything. But Joseph doesn't do that. What does he do? God's at work. Because I still believe in the dream that I had. I still believe that what he said is true. And so I'm seeing these guys talk about dreams that they're having, and I'm like, ooh, God's doing something. He's at work. So he hasn't lost his excitement for what the Lord is doing. He hasn't lost his drive to be a part of what God is doing. And he looks at something that really, there's no cause for Joseph to have any faith that these dreams mean anything. And yet he says, no, the interpretation of these things belong to God. Tell me your dream. I want to hear it. That's a resilient faith. Oh, let me ask you a question. If at this point, Joseph's faith has not completely eroded, what can you do to this guy? What can you do to him that will make him stop trusting the Lord? Because at this, for my eye, he's got every reason to at this point. And yet he doesn't. I want this. When we talk about living a full life in Jesus, this is what we mean. We don't mean wealth. We don't mean health. We don't mean large houses and lots of possessions. What we mean is a faith that cannot be shaken, regardless of your circumstance. And I want that. Because when you become that, you are untouchable. There's nothing anyone can say or do to harm you ultimately, because you know God is faithful. So this resilient faith that Joseph has, here's what we got to understand. It will never be built on the foundation of occasional encounters with God. And if you and I are content that the pinnacle of our relationship with Jesus is to come in here each week, not, I don't want to diminish what happens in here. This is really important. But if this is the sum total of what following Jesus looks like for you, you will never have a resilient faith. Because a resilient faith is built on the practice of God's presence in every moment, living every moment as if you are living before the face of God, because you are. And so I think the most challenging question for me specifically in this passage is, have I grown accustomed to sporadic awareness of God? Am I even comfortable with it? Like, I've gotten so used to just this sporadic awareness of God's presence that I don't even realize that it's not the best, that it's just what it is. But if we want to be a people prepared for the calling that God has on our lives, we have to learn what Joseph learned, and that's to practice God's presence. So here's what practicing the presence of God means, because I've said that a few times now, and you may need me to flesh out that just a little bit. But here's what it means. It means cultivating an awareness of God's nearness by directing and redirecting our attention toward him throughout the day. It's really quite simple. It is simply directing and redirecting your mind's attention and your heart's affection to the Lord again and again throughout the day. And as many times as you notice, oh, I'm not thinking about how near the Lord is right now, you bring your mind back. And the beautiful thing about that is you can be doing any host of activities. You can be cleaning your house. You can be sorting files at work. You can be going through cancer treatments. You can be answering emails. You can be having coffee with a friend. It doesn't matter, because God is present to you in all those moments. And the only thing you need to do to be present to him is be aware of it. So as often as you are aware of his nearness, draw your mind's attention and heart's affections further in. And here's a few ways that I, for me, that have been helpful. And these are just some starting points, but honestly, get creative with this. The things that stir your affections for the Lord, do those things. Do those things as often as you can. Do those things. But here's a few ways that for me, I've tried to sort through this. One is pay attention to how you start and end your day. You know what my default kind of setting is for starting and ending my day? It's this. I'll just be honest with you. It's alarm goes off. I reach over to the phone, turn off the alarm. I open it up. It's email. It's text messages. It's what happened in the news, what happened in social media. Did somebody send me another funny video? You know, it's that type of thing. Those are the things that is my default setting. How do I end my day? Email, text messages, social media, news. How is that shaping my heart? Let me tell you. I can just tell you for me what it does. It does not help worry and anxiety, for one thing. You see everything that's going wrong in the world, and it does not fuel your heart with confidence. That's for sure. So I'm starting and ending my day worrying. Worrying about my kids, worrying about the world they're growing up in, all that. Also, comparison. I'm looking at people who look like they're absolutely killing it in life, and I'm like, why do I feel like I'm 10 years, 15 years behind? Because that comparison completely demolishes the things that God's trying to do in my heart and in my life, because I'm too busy stacking myself against somebody else. So here's some things that we can do. Is as you wake in the morning, thank God that his mercies are new every morning. And man, if coffee on the porch, sitting in the quiet with Jesus is something that stirs your affections, sounds good to me. Do those things to point your mind's attention and your heart's affection to God. Second thing you can do is reduce the noise. Reduce the noise. Turn down the volume. Don't allow the things that silence the voice of God in your life, the place that they have in your heart and mind. Turn down the noise. Social media, news, podcasts, music, all of those things are great. I love those things. But when they become tools in the hands of the enemy to completely block out what the Spirit is trying to say to you, what are they worth? Are they worth keeping in your life? So the challenge for myself is often to go for periods of just abstinence from these things. Just don't, when I'm driving into the office, don't turn on anything. Just sit in the quiet with God. When I'm going from point A to point B, when I'm in between meetings, rather than filling that with, well, what's happening on social media, what's happening in the news, instead, just sit in the quiet. Ask God to prepare your heart for the next thing that you have. Invite him into that moment. And finally, in all your ways, acknowledge him. In all your ways, acknowledge him. The way that I used to read this verse was, in the difficult decisions, acknowledge him. But is that what it says? In all of your ways, acknowledge him. Are you angry with God or with someone else? Tell him. Did something really great happen to you at work or in a friendship that you have? Tell him. Praise him. Are you sad? Are you feeling grief? Are you feeling lost? Are you feeling abandoned? Tell him. If you pray and you feel like your prayers don't get past the ceiling, tell him. And tell him you're frustrated by it, because you're not hiding anything from him anyway. He already knows you're frustrated with him. And yet, you, for your benefit, can build your trust with the Lord by trusting him with it. He already knows. He doesn't need you to tell him, but he invites you to tell him. There have been moments in being a dad where I have known that my kids got into something that I knew they shouldn't have gotten into. But instead of like jumping at them, I just wait. And I wait for them to come. And sometimes it's a few days, and sometimes it's, and maybe finally it takes a little bit of prompting, but when they finally trust me and tell me what's wrong, man, the doors of relationship and connection fly wide open. And that's exactly the thing that we miss whenever we have the assumption of he's the God of the universe, he's holding all things together. He doesn't care that I'm sad or I'm frustrated that I have a flat tire. Yes, he does. He cares about you personally and wants to personally hear from you and walk with you. So there is no care too small or too big that you can't bring before the Lord. The point is, in all your ways, acknowledge him. It's not for you to clean yourself up for God's presence. It's to bring your whole self to God's presence. And that's how relationship grows. That's how your trust becomes resilient, is by bringing these things to him again and again and again. So the story of Joseph, it reminds us that God is always preparing his people for our calling and then ultimately for our future glory. And he does this in ways that we often don't expect, and honestly, in ways that I didn't ask for. You didn't ask for. But before Joseph can be exalted next to the throne of Pharaoh and basically become the vessel through which the whole earth is rescued, God had to rescue his heart in obscurity. God had to work on Joseph's heart and prepare him for this calling. His faith in God's unbreakable promises became resilient here. And I don't think if Joseph went straight from his father's house to the house of Pharaoh that he would have that same resilient faith. But it was in going to the pit, it was in being abandoned, it was in being betrayed by his brothers that resilient faith grew. So we, like Joseph, we have to come awake to the gospel, recognizing that before we can live according to our calling, we have to know the one who calls. Then we never get tired of the presence of God. It becomes our daily, minute by minute, hour by hour pursuit to live before his face. So how do you need to respond this morning? Maybe you have been asleep at the wheel spiritually. Like, you know the Lord, you've been walking with him for a while, but you've been asleep at the wheel, going through the motions spiritually, and maybe you sense God calling you out of this contentment with sporadic awareness of his presence. And he's calling you into a deep life of enjoyment of his presence in every moment. Maybe you know that God is preparing you for a specific calling, like a calling to ministry, to baptism, to share your faith with your neighbor, your coworker, your family member. Or do you sense that maybe today God's waking somebody up for the first time? That I need to come to Jesus because I'm like this cupbearer and baker. I have no hope. I've sinned against the king, and I want to be a disciple. This king, like I said, invites you to come. So maybe that's you this morning. Whatever the case is, know that God's not just preparing a place for you. He's preparing you for a place. He's not just preparing a calling for you. He is preparing you to fill that calling. And all of this is accomplished through his presence. So don't despise the waiting. If you find yourself in a similar pit like Joseph, don't despise the waiting, and don't mistake the waiting with God's absence or that he has forgotten you. It's usually here that God is doing his deepest work to prepare you one moment of awareness and one act of surrender at a time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Coggin Church Podcast. We would love for you to worship with us this Sunday. You'll find service times and everything you need to plan your visit at CoggynChurch.org. We look forward to seeing you.